How has our Judeo-Christian culture moved us to a theological framework for a system of exploitation? For years, I've been haunted by a fantasy involving someone like Jesus. This person, woman or man, it doesn't matter, comes into a community and talks about love. She, or he, tells people they should treat each other with respect, and that this respect must extend to humans and non-humans alike. A crowd gathers as this person says they should do unto others as they'd have others do unto them, and they begin to murmur quietly as they hear that they should share with each other everything they own. The discomfort of especially the crowd's children grows more noticeable as this stranger tells them they should love each other, love the land. He or she says nothing about loving the enemy. The children hide giggles behind their hands, and now even the adults bite the insides of their cheeks. Finally, after much hesitation, one of the community members responds, "Friend, we respect what you have to say and thank you for telling us, but can't you tell us something we don't already know?" The stranger looks closely and, seeing the obvious well-being of the people, realizes that her or his words are redundant. The stranger merges into the community and all continue with the dailiness of their lives. The reality of our Judeo-Christian culture is, of course, far different. So that leads to the question, how has our Judeo-Christian culture moved us to a theological framework for a system of exploitation? And I think that, I think the story of Jesus is really interesting because it's on one level a story of teaching us how to live like this. But I read a book by John Lamb Lash several years after I wrote A Language Older Than Words, in which he described the relationship between God and Jesus in a much more interesting fashion. God is, I think anybody who really thinks about it recognizes that the capital G God of the Old Testament is a real nasty piece of work. Jealous, warlike, hateful, hating the body, hating the earth, genocidal, hates women, promotes rape, is really the prototypical, patriarchal father in an abusive relationship. And the classic patriarch. And in this context of seeing God the Father as an abuser, what John Lamb Lash did was to talk about what is unique among Jesus' messages and put Jesus into the context of a larger abusive dynamic. And where Jesus talks about turning the other cheek, and where Jesus talks about loving your enemy, let's pretend you have an abusive husband, and let's pretend that the woman goes to a friend and says to her friend, "My husband's being really abusive. What should I do? How can I get out?" And the husband and the friend tells her, "You know, you need to turn the other cheek, and you need to love someone even when they're doing terrible things to you." What we would call that is an ally to the abuser. And so in many ways, the Bible becomes a good cop, bad cop routine, where the bad cop is the capital G God and the good cop is Jesus, who also, by the way, I mean, the story of Jesus was that he was supposed to come here and live a sinless life to let us know that it is possible to live a sinless life, which is to let us know that God's rules are actually quite fair, and that if you are not able to live a sinless life, it's your fault because somebody did it. And so on those levels, the lesson of Jesus can become really quite, it's a movement in the sophistication of a, I mean, we can read the Old and New Testaments as a sociological study of how dictatorships become more sophisticated. that the Old Testament God basically keeps you in line through pounding on you and by delivering plagues when you displease him. And then the New Testament God, he is more sophisticated and suffers the children to come unto him. And yet he is still serving his Father. And so that in some ways are some of the, those in some ways are some of the lessons that I learned from the story of Jesus. And there's another story here too, which is in that excerpt that we just, that I just read, which is that what happened to Jesus is he went around preaching love, and for that he was crucified, and for that he was killed. And that's a cautionary tale. And that was actually why I wrote that section, is because what would it be like to live among a people for whom that was not a cautionary tale, that if you talk about love, we will kill you. If you talk about sharing everything with all your neighbors, we will kill you. But instead, if this was how the people simply lived, they wouldn't need this. They wouldn't need that lesson. And you know, everything about my work is aimed at trying to get us to that place where we no longer need that lesson, where we have in place already a series of stories and a series of social taboos and a series of social strictures and a series of social rewards that cause us to already act with love and affection and responsibility. And, you know, insofar as any of us have experiences of being in healthy functioning families, this is how healthy functioning families already work. That, you know, little sister gives to big sister and big sister gives to little sister, and they are, sure, they have squabbles, but they are working collectively to make their family work. And it struck me for the longest time, for as long as I've been doing my work, it's really struck me that part of the problem with this culture is that there is this bifurcation between, within our families, we are supposed to, you know, pass the potatoes around the table in a polite fashion. But then when we jump to the larger community, suddenly we're supposed to, everybody is, all the interactions are red in tooth and claw, and we're supposed to act purely selfishly. And that's not how healthy functioning communities work. So in many ways, what I was trying to get at with that paragraph was how simple and straightforward healthy functioning communities are and how very far away we are from them. And I think that especially, you know, this one is going to be posted before Christmas, and I think it's a good time to reflect on what it would be like to live in an entire community that treated each other with respect, and where this was taken for granted that we would treat each other with respect. And I also think it's a good time to talk about how, and we've talked about this in other videos, that there are, this culture has an absolute gift for co-opting any message whatsoever and turning it to the advantage of atrocities, turning it into an atrocity. And I find it pretty interesting that let's presume that Jesus was not acting as a good cop for the bad cop God, but instead that, let's just talk about the message of love, And I find it extraordinary that it only took 100, 200 years for people to be killing each other in the name of this religion of love. One of my favorite stories is about the Homoousians. And the Homoousians, I don't know, I think this is 300 or 400 current era. The Homoousians and the Homoousians got into a big fight. One of them has an umlaut over one of the O's and one of them does not. And they were killing each other over this. There were hundreds and hundreds of people dying because, or being killed by either the Homoousians or the Homoousians. And the resolution to this conflict was actually kind of funny. The big difference between the Homoousians and the Homoousians is that one of them believed that the hells of fire were literal flames. One group believed that the flames of hell were literal flames, and the other believed that they were spiritual flames. And they were killing each other over this. And they finally got together and had a big synod, and this stopped the conflict because each side went away from the synod recognizing that the other side would know soon enough who was right, because the other side would go to hell. And so there is this tremendous capacity that, I don't know if this is all across humans or if it's part of this culture, to take anything, even a good message. It's like we have the opposite of the, Rumpelstiltskin in the metaphor. Rumpelstiltskin spins straw into gold. And that's a metaphor for how people who are abused can turn everyday occurrences into something valuable. That's what part of the story of Rumpelstiltskin is for me. There's more to it. But it seems to me that this culture has an equivalent gift for taking any message, including one of love, and turning it into one of conflict, and divisiveness, and to increasing centralized control, as Christianity has now done for the last couple of thousand years. I think this culture has an absolute gift for that, and I think that that is something we need to recognize and struggle very hard to dismantle.